Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 77 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by the wonderful and happy Scott Lance.
Well, how can I not be happy? It's the Happy Hearthstone.
I know. I'm paying you good money to be happy, Scott.
Where's my check?
It'll come at the end if we agree on all of our review scores.
Ruh-roh.
So you better get on board with my fives and my zeros, or else no money, buddy.
Yeah, you were trying to talk me up and down in some cases, and I was kind of the moderate voice this time around.
Yeah, I'm a man of extremes, Scott. I love, I hate, I don't feel neutral.
You're a man of passion.
I am a man of passion. I like that. Ooh, yeah, it makes me kind of mysterious, fancy. I like it. But let's get into the review, because that's what people are really here for, and it's going to be a long episode, so get your earbuds ready, or get ready for your commute, just circle around the building till this episode is done, because it's going to be a while. Scott, why are you happy, buddy?
I'm happy because I'm going to Disneyland again soon.
Ooh, nice. So you're going to Disneyland and California Adventure?
Oh, yeah, always. Yep. Stand with Grand Californian right there on the middle of everything.
Oh, see, that's good. I think you get in, like, early if you stay at the hotel, right?
Yeah, sort of. There's one of the parks is open an hour early each day, so you get to go. Yep.
I hope you just run with your arms up in the air for that hour. Like, it's mine. I'm free. It feels like that's such a fancy experience.
Well, you can go grab the fast passes a little earlier than everybody else.
Oh, see, that's the smart way to do it.
Yeah. I do all the research. You know, I do logistics at work all the time, you know, with making games, and now, like, I have to plan out my Disney visits to be efficient. Efficient.
The most efficient place on Earth. That's the other nickname for it.
Boy, are you happy?
I'm happy because, so, my son is 2, and this week, he started, like, he somehow found a way to pole vault out of his crib at night, and when he goes down for naps, like, it was terrifying. My wife had put him down for a nap and was sitting downstairs and just heard stuff behind her and was like, is someone in the house? Like, what's going on? And then goes into the room and Gideon's just sitting at the table playing with the mail. And like, what are you doing down here? Did you get out? You jumped out of your crib, ran down the stairs by yourself. Like, it's a miracle he's not dead. So I went out and I bought a bunch of different stuff to like safety proof my house and took down one of the walls in his crib and locked him in his room forever. It's going to be like a Rapunzel situation, but he's contained and in theory he's going to be safe. And that's what matters most. I don't care that he has no friends and grows hair down to the river. I don't know what Rapunzel did. but that's why I'm happy. He's safe, happy, hopefully. Let's talk about the news.
Yeah.
Because we've got a lot of news going on. We're in the middle of the Karazhan release. Obviously, it is. We're recording this on Tuesday. The last wing comes out on Thursday of this week. But 3 wings have already come out and released a lot of cards. Scott, you were mentioning how many more cards there are this time around in the adventure than usual.
And then the last expansion is when they changed the formula where they started giving more cards for less money. And they keep that same ratio this time around.
Yeah, so it's been really fun. I mean, I was looking at how many cards are coming out in the last wing, and it said 11. And I was like, no, it can't be that many cards in the last wing. And no, sure enough, it is.
Yeah, I think there were 12 this week.
What?
Or well, last week. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's super exciting. So we're going to be reviewing all the neutral cards today. We're really excited. I love these adventure reviews because we actually get to talk about every single card in the set, which we don't do with expansions.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're just covering the neutral cards. Next episode, we'll be covering all of the class cards. So we'll give each card 2 scores. The arena score, which is basically the score that you'd get the card when you're drafting it in arena. And so this assumes that you don't have the perfect deck, that you don't even know what all the cards in your deck are going to be, and you could be any class. And kind of in general, you know, obviously if it's like a weapon, or I guess neutral cards wouldn't be weapons, but a neutral minion that affects weapons, we're going to assume that you're a class with weapons. Because if you're a class without weapons, you just don't want that card.
Yeah, of course.
And then the constructed score is the other score we give, and that's in a pre-built deck that wants the card most. So the deck that was built around that card, if you could even do that, because some cards you just can't build around. And so it's kind of the best, not the best case scenario, but just the deck that really likes that card. And so that's our constructed score. And if you want to see, we're going to be giving things ratings from 0 to 5, where the full rating guide is on the website. You should just go read it rather than try and listen to me explain it, which I'm apparently awful at. But we'll give it a 0 through 5. 0 is awful unplayable. Like Poison Seeds is our classic example on our show. Because Scott, do you still hate Poison Seeds?
Always.
Always. Okay, I remember how much you hated that card when we first reviewed it. Just need to check. And then 5 is so good you always have to play it. So that's like Tyrion Forgering, Call of the Wild. And then 3 and 2 is kind of in the middle of solid value, kind of acceptable backup cards. So like Crazed Alchemist is on the 2 side, and on the 3 side is something like Assassinate or Senjin Shieldmaster. Just to give you an idea of the framework we're dealing with as we're going in, because some of these cards, I mean, we go to high highs and low lows on some of these cards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I tried to talk Scott into some even higher highs and lower lows.
Yeah, there's some 0s and 5s in here. Josh was really pushing towards the edges, and I was overall a force for moderation here. But they're highs or lows. You'll laugh, you'll cry.
We'll fight.
Yep.
It'll be good. All right, let's jump into it, because we got a lot of cards to talk about. Why don't you introduce the first card?
All right, the first one we have is Arcane Anomaly. This is a, and these are all neutrals, of course, but this is a 1 mana cost, 2/1. So, you know, that's not too bad as long as it's got some sort of ability or extra oomph to it. And this one says, whenever you cast a spell, give this minion +1 health. So it's kind of, what is it, a mana worm? Kind of an inverse mana worm?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw this, I was pretty unimpressed, but and it is low impact. Any mana, 1 mana cost spell is going to be low impact. But, you know, the more I thought about this, there are some good opening plays that some decks are happy to make. You know, like if you played this guy on turn 1, followed by, say, a coin and, I don't know what a good example is, like a Secret and Paladin if you had one sitting around, or
yeah, I mean the combo with Mana Worm is to do Mirror Image too.
Yeah, Mirror Image isn't a bad one, and I mean, you know, Mana Worm is a better card that would leave you with a 3/3 in that case, but in this case you'd have a 2/3 under the same circumstances, and you can do it in a class other than Mage, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, this card seems bad to me. I mean, it's very high risk. Anything with 1 health that doesn't have an immediate impact on the board, like Abusive Sergeant, is just, it's so sketchy to me, because almost half the classes in the game can just kill it with their hero power. And growing your health is so less important than growing your attack, especially in decks that are playing heavy spells, like Mages. Being able to defend it with Mirror Image and then just keep punching for more and more damage every single turn is what makes Mana Worm good. I think there's just high risk, very low reward.
Yeah, and I don't think it's great, but it's not as bad as I'd originally thought, I don't think.
Yeah. All right, so what scores are you thinking?
Yeah, so I think we agreed on a 2 on Arena and a 3 in Constructed. Are you on board with that still?
Yeah, yeah. 3 is pushing it for me, but I'll let it slide. So actually, I should mention, we adjusted our review score for this time than usual. We went back when we reevaluated all the cards. We wanted to put classic cards in there. And we also adjusted because the power level has gone up since we first made that guide years ago. Where like Chillwind Yeti was our classic 3 example, where nowadays, I mean, a plain vanilla minion isn't really worth a 3. That's not solid value anymore.
That's true. In Constructed, it's not.
In Constructed, yeah.
I'd still put it a 3 in Arena, probably.
Yeah, and actually, I should mention, too, I'm super excited. So I think I mentioned this on the show last time. We got Ryan, who came on the show 2 episodes ago to give us the rundown on Arena. And if you listen to that, I mean, you just know this guy knows Arena more than anybody else I've ever talked with in my life. So we had him come through and help us with our arena scores. So in some of these, he's like, whoa, 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 that's too high. No, that's too low. Here's why. And he gave us a lot of good background info. So I'll be sharing kind of his opinions where they differ from ours and kind of the insight that he provided where I thought it was particularly interesting. But thank you very much to Ryan for helping us kind of solidify these scores because he knows arena better than anyone.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the worst card in the set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Purify.
No, it's not.
I don't know. It's not. It is Runic Egg. It is a one cost. And so I should mention, too, we're doing all the commons first. Then we'll do rares and epics and legendaries. So it's a common one cost, 0/2, death rattle draw card. This was the first minion that we've seen that's actually a zero. We were trying to find a minion as an example to be our review score because normally minions leave bodies on the board. So it's really hard to be a minion and get a zero. But Runic Egg found a way, man.
This is so bad. Like, why does this card exist? You can't attack with it. And the best thing that can happen is that if you find a way to make it so that it can attack, if you do that much work, and making it attack is really just so that it can kill itself, yeah, then your reward is that you get to replace it as a card when you could have just had a non-horrible card in your deck to begin with.
Yeah.
So why? Why would you ever play this?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was like, would I play this card for zero mana? I don't think so. Would I play it for -1 mana? I still have to think about it, but I think I would.
And it's like, you at the point where if the game, you gain a mana, it's like half of an innervate.
Yeah. Like at that point, it's just like, okay, I guess I'll play it. But yeah, the game would have to pay me to play this card.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is zeros across the board, right?
Yeah. I mean, certainly in Arena, there's nothing you can reliably do with this. And if there's some magic combination in Constructed, I don't know what it is. I saw this in the co-op challenge. Blizzard put this in one of the decks. And, like, the big thing there was, like, okay, great. It eventually dies, and then your co-op partner... Oh, wait, no, that wasn't this card. Sorry, but... I saw this in one of the decks recently, some randomized deck, and I was just like, this is horrible. Even when it was trying to be good, it was one of the class challenges.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Class challenge
decks. And there was some clever, and I put clever in quotes, some clever combo, and I'm still just like, no, they're trying to show off like how great this card can be, and it's like, okay, well, I barely avoided it being a huge liability this game. Congratulations.
Yeah. The best case scenarios that they show off is paying one mana for a really delayed cantrip. Like, okay. The best comment I saw for this was on Hearthhead. The top rated comment was, you're probably looking for this card with a link to Loot Hoarder.
Loot Hoarder is not bad. Runic Egg is so bad.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's talk about a card that may or may not be bad. Netherspite Historian.
Yeah. So this guy is a 2 mana cost 1/3. With a battle cry of, if you're holding a dragon, discover a dragon. And man, I'll tell you, I have a hard time knowing what to make of this. So 1/3 is not very exciting stats for a 2-drop. I mean, I'd rather have a 2/2 or something at that point. So it's kind of poorly balanced stats. It's below vanilla curve. But you do get a dragon out of it in a dragon deck. Is it good to get a random dragon, or should you just have had a fairy dragon in the first place?
So I'm actually super high on this card in Constructed.
Really? Really?
I'm totally with you in Arena, but I think this card is deceptively strong. So for me, the thing with Discover that I had to learn when we were reviewing it was you always have to think about what you're getting, right? And some things are much better than others. And dragons tend to be three things. They tend to be very big.
Yeah.
They tend to be very strong, like sturdy on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be unique.
Yeah.
Legendaries. And so, especially when you're discovering you have three options, I think you're usually going to have a chance to draw a bomb that's a legendary to toss into your hand. I think this is late game gold. I mean, this is something to throw on the board. I agree the minion is basically a throwaway. You could give me a spell at this cost, and I might do it anyways. So I think the minion on the board is kind of just gravy. I think this card is going to be excellent in dragon decks.
Yeah, I suppose in a dragon deck... The thing you care most about is getting a dragon, and I mean, you don't want it to be bad, but you kind of don't care what it is. And your choice of three should never be too bad. And
yeah,
I agree with you. Dragon, like, you know, Murlocs are mostly bad, and there's like a couple that are kind of okay-ish. Dragons are sort of the other way around. They're mostly good, and then the ones that aren't good are still not that bad.
Yeah, like I'm having trouble thinking of three total dragons that I just wouldn't want to draw.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I can think of a couple, but the chances of your entire Discover board being filled with three bad ones is pretty low.
Yep. Yeah, you know, the thing that makes dragons quote-unquote bad, just unwieldy, you know, risky, is just that they're so expensive. You know, like, yeah. If you got Chromagus and Onyxia and Alexstrasza and it's turn two, you're like, well, I mean, that's not great. It'll be great come turn eight or nine, but it's not great in the meantime.
Yeah, that is very true. All right, so Arena, I mean, this is just a terrible body that's never going to proc.
Yeah.
So, but it's still one, right? It's not as bad as Runic Egg.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a body, it's two mana, it's, you get, I don't know, about mana and a half's worth of stats out of it, so that works. And then
one, and then, but constructed, it's not a five, but I think it's a four. I think it's above value.
Yeah, I think so. You're getting a good card, and then if you draw it, like, if you play it, I guess, in the mid to late game, you can choose, like, you know, at the very end of the game, you're probably just going to choose the most expensive one, which is going to translate, probably, to the best one. And then in the mid game, you can choose to either make that long-term investment or something that's going to fit in your mana curve a little sooner, like Azure Drake or something.
Yeah. Oh, man, Azure Drake. Oh, that'd be such a good draw, because then you also get to draw another card.
I know,
oh,
it's pretty good. And so and it's value. Your dragon synergy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so four. I sold you up on that one. Good, good.
Yeah, sure.
All right, the next card, Pompous Thespian. So this is a 2-cost, 3-2 taunt. It's kind of a variant that we're just kind of used to, a 2-cost, 3-2 with a keyword on it at this point. This one's taunt. He's holding the head of the Annoyatron, which gets him some points in my book. Let's kill that guy off. I don't know. He can trade up, right? He could take out 3/3s, but I think he'll mostly just break even. It seems pretty solid vanilla.
Yeah, I mean, as a taunt creature, you kind of got to expect he's gonna be killed by like a 2/2 or 2/1, but because he, you know, he's the first thing your opponent's got to kill, which means he's probably gonna be the target of the first attack of the turn, which means your opponent gets to pick how to do that. So this is a weird case where I feel like he's a little less than the sum of his parts, if that makes any sense. And the 3/2 isn't bad, and taunt isn't bad, and you would think you throw this together and you get a good card, but these are almost like anti-synergy. Like, they certainly don't help each other out. You know, if I'm going to trade up, I want a 3/2 stealth. That's going to trade up, because you're going to choose what to attack it into, and you're going to go into a 4/3 or something. But in this case, you're probably going to die to a 1 or 2 cost minion. So it's not horrible, but I'm not excited. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say in Arena, it's a dude with taunt. I mean, it's going to slow down. It's going to force him to trade. I think it's pretty decent there. I think we landed on a 3 in Arena.
Yeah.
Ryan jumped in because I think we had it a 2, but I think Ryan wanted to bump it up just because he's talking about, how the taunt makes it relevant later in the game too.
Yeah. And you know, there are 3/2s and 2/3s that are kind of vanilla, you know, keyword beast or whatever.
Yeah.
And those are real cards. So this is better than that. Yeah, for sure.
That's true. Constructed though, I mean, I think it's a 1 again.
Yeah. There's really not a whole lot you can do with this. Even in like I'm just trying to think what deck wants taunt more than anything. And I guess the Warrior Taunt deck, and I'm not even excited about it there. It's taunt.
Debatably doesn't even exist yet, but
yeah, true. And I just taunt generally wants to be on something with lower attack and higher health, and this doesn't have that.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Yeah.
All right. I see what's next.
Why do you say it like that?
sorry. I don't want to bias our listeners. Scott, please introduce this bad card. Do you think?
Yeah, what's that card? This is a Pantry Spider, which I think we ended up compromising on this. I don't think either of us got the score we wanted here.
No, a good compromise leaves everyone unhappy, right?
Pantry Spider. So this is a 1/3 for 3 mana with a battle cry of summon another 1/3 spider, which is, I think, a cellar spider, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So you get the pantry and the cellar spiders. Anyway, so 2 1/3s for 3 mana, and they're both beasts, which is interesting.
So yeah, I mean, beast is the most interesting thing on this card, I think.
Yeah, it helps. There are a variety of decks, and I say this with some confidence because this is this is a type of deck that I've been playing around with in at least three classes: Druid, Hunter, and Warlock, which is just like, I call them the horde decks, meaning, you know, just tons and tons of dudes just flood the board and then do things that give buffs to everything. And what's nice about both Druid and Hunter variations of those is that there's a ton of beast synergy, so you can create sort of a, you know, like a dual purpose deck. And I'm not claiming these are top tier, but this is a deck that I already play for fun anyway. And the Pantry Spider's honestly not a bad addition in there. Getting 2/4 worth of stats for 3 mana is fine. Or sorry, 2/6 worth of stats for 3 mana, if you were to really add it up like that, is above curve. I do think that distributed over 2 bodies, and this is a point that you made, they're individually very low impact, and so they're going to be kind of easy to kill. But if you can get any sort of buff shenanigans going on, or if stickiness is just important to your deck for whatever reason, that's when I think it starts to actually see its potential.
Yeah, I agree. In the decks that really need bodies on the board for like Bloodlust and stuff like that, absolutely. It's just like, I look at it and compare it to Pompous Thespian. You're just going to trade both those Pantry Spiders into Pompous Thespian, and he paid one less mana for it. The one attack is just what kills it to me. It's just, it's not going to kill anything on its own. It's, you're going to have to trade both into it anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. They wear buffs really, really well. Like, you throw +2/+2 on one of these things, and that's good. Or, you know, especially Druid has a lot of ways of adding +1/+1 to everything you've got, and suddenly that's pretty good to have two bodies to take that. And 2/2/4s are nothing to sneeze at. So, like, yeah. I get that it's not a super great card, but I just don't think they're that bad either. I mean, I think it's a solid vanilla-ish with upside and some minor synergy potential.
Yeah. That sounds about good.
Which I'd put it at 3 in both cases, personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get on board with 3. 3 seems fine. I'm not excited about it, but historically, I think I've been less excited about these type of cards in general.
Yeah.
So well, it's just good to... Yeah, and you've been a little higher on it, so it's just good for people to know kind of where we come from.
Yeah, I remember back in NAX, we had the same conversation around Spectral Spider.
Yeah.
And I was, I think in that case, I said it was a 3. And you were like, dude, you were crazy.
You were right.
Yeah, whether it was a true 5 is hard to tell, but it was used in a lot of decks. Like, it was, you know, hardly the MVP. It's not like you saw a Spectral Spider drop and you just threw up your hands like, insta concede. You know that?
Yeah.
It
was annoying.
It was a silent workhorse, and it was a lot of value. It was highly efficient. You know, any of the bodies only had one toughness, but it didn't matter, man. They still did work. And I really think that quality is here. I think this is not as good of a card as that. But, you know, I was pushing up towards a 4 on this, and I think you were pushing for a 2. So we kind of compromised on the 3.
Yeah. And Ryan actually mentioned that he would probably give it a 2 in Arena. But yeah. He said he'd consider it a 3 for Hunter and Druid and Paladin, right? So in the classes that are doing those buffs, but you just have to rely on getting those buffs when you're doing Arena, which is sometimes tricky.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, all right, so 3 on both. The next card is Violet Illusionist. So this is a 3-cost, 4/3. It says, during your turn, your hero is immune. So this is one of the cards where we're basically, the arena score is going to be for classes with weapons. So if you get a class without weapon, it's not going to mean as much. And so I think this card is really interesting, especially for warrior control attrition style, where you're just going super late game. Because you're guaranteed one effect, right? The turn you play and you have a weapon, you can do something with it. And I think that's really all it takes to make it worthwhile. Because this is already a 4-cost, 4/3. And if it was essentially heal yourself 1, heal yourself 3, I think anything more than 1 is already paid for itself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you and I aren't quite in agreement on this card, because I think it's a little better than you do. But... the immune thing, there's a lot of interesting practical applications. There's Warlock, there's weapon classes. You know, Warlock's got damage everything. It's got the hero power.
So yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about the Warlock hero power.
Yeah. You know, when you're playing against, like a Hunter or some of the other classes, there are some traps that you might be able to set off, like explosive trap that could hit you in the face. You can prevent all that kind of stuff. I see this as a vanilla with a small amount of upside. I mean, I refer to things like this as preemptive healing. It doesn't heal you, obviously, but it prevents you from taking damage. And so in a way, it's almost better than healing because you can still use it when you're full hit points. And that's worth something. So I actually like her a decent amount. I would have put her at a 3.
I think actually, so now that we talked through, because we originally had 2s down here, I think I'm on board with 3s.
Yeah.
Especially the Warlock synergy. There's so many cards, especially like Pit Lord and stuff, that might be interesting.
Yeah.
So this is one of the cards that hasn't come out yet, so we haven't gotten to play around with it. But yeah, I'm on board with the 3. I think there's potential there.
Yeah, I have a deck mostly built right now called, I think I called it Pain Lock or something like that. The idea of just a bunch of cards like Ultra Aggro, a bunch of cards that just doesn't care about hurting yourself, and then some cards that can kind of mitigate that damage. And I wanted to throw the Violet Illusionist in there because you can use it again to draw cards or, you know, to shave damage off your Pit Lords or Fire Imps or Infernos or whatever. I think there might be real potential there.
Yeah, I think so too. The comboing with the hero power is so good, especially late game when your opponent thinks you can't afford to use your hero power to drop this down and then suddenly hero power. I mean, that could be a big play. They need to get rid of that fast or else you're just going to win off card advantage.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. What's up next?
All right, we got the Zubat here, which is a 3-mana cost 3/3 mech. Don't see too many of those these days. So it's a mech tribal card, right?
Yeah.
Well, the battle cry is give a random beast, dragon, and murloc +1/+1. So, yeah, this is all over the place. Now, when I originally read this, I thought it was give like a random card from one of those classes +1/+1, but it's from each of those creature types, beast, dragon, and murloc.
Yeah, one random beast, one random dragon, and one random murloc.
That's right. So assuming that the mech isn't worth anything to you, if you're kind of gauging on vanilla standards, you need to connect with at least one of those in order to make it like 4/4 total stats. Although the +1/+1 buff will tend to have kind of what amounts to haste or charge. And it can also change the combat math. You know, a lot of times your opponent will end a turn with you having no good attacks, and this can really futz with that math. So if you have two of the classes, this actually does start to get pretty good. And while murlocs aren't typically great, especially in a deck that's not all in on murloc, beast and dragon isn't bad.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of good beasts and a lot of good dragons. They've been tossing beast onto so many cards lately.
Yep. Yeah, you can just splash those, and there's some, I mean, heck, throw a Strangletorn Tiger or a Jungle Panther in about any deck.
Yeah. You know who else would love this card? Pantry Spider.
Yeah. Actually, I have them both in the same deck.
Yeah. So I think this card is deceptively strong because it's going to do well. I don't even think you need to get 2 procs. I think you need to get 1 proc, and it's already a great card.
I think you get 1 and it's fine. I think you get 2 and now you're really
talking. 3 with some charge? It's just fine?
Yeah, you got to work a little bit for it, I think, a lot of times. Because you're balancing that with the risk that there are times you can't cast it or you have to cast it and you're underwhelmed. Also, this is a little more of a win more card. This class of cards, because it relies on you having a lot of stuff on the board, which is easy if you're ahead and is harder if you're behind. So, you know, we should always be on the lookout for cards that are better when you're behind, not better when you're ahead.
Yeah, that's true. I think this is basically like a more interesting Shattered Sun Cleric. So I kind of like it. The one thing I would say is if you're going to chase this card, don't try and do a 3-tribe deck. Just be happy with 2 or 1.
Yeah.
And just go all in on that. I've seen a few people try and do like beasts, dragons, and murlocs, and you just end up with a lot of weird cards that don't work well together.
Yeah, I did one of these menagerie decks. I think I did in Paladin, and I threw in 2 Murloc Knights and maybe a Sir Finley. I threw in one other Murloc. Because we'll come across them later, but there's other cards like the Curator and the Menagerie Magician. So there's kind of an archetype here. So I think there's some benefit if you can find some guys that aren't, some murlocs that aren't horrible. Problem is most of them are horrible in a non-murloc deck.
Yeah, I think putting the 3 on there is a trap. I think that's a sucker just to try and get people in.
Yeah. I think there's that 2/1 that brings out the taunt guy. He's not bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is good.
And he's playable. So I think that's an okay card to put in there.
Side story, Scott. I played someone who played 2 Murloc Knights, and I was not having a good game. He got probably 5 uses out of them. Never got anything more than a 2/1. Wow. I felt bad for him at the end because I eventually ended up winning even though I was playing awful. Because kept doing it to get Mergleton over and over to get the 2-1 without charge. And just like, oh my God, I felt so bad for him. He had to be hating life over there.
Oh, jeez.
But it pays off for all the times that they do it and that you get Murloc Knight out of it. So it's got a balance. All right. Next up, Arcanosmith. This is a 4-cost 3/2 with a battle cry. Summon a 0/5 minion with taunt. So, this is at 4-cost, so it's dealing directly with Senjin Shieldmaster. And if this, am I wrong? Like, I would just rather have a 3/5 with taunt than a 3/2 and an 0/5 with taunt. The 0/5 with taunt just feels like a throwaway.
It is, but that might be okay depending on circumstance. I think in just like normal vanilla circumstances, I think you're right. Senshin Shieldmaster is better. I think in decks that are like what I described before, if you're looking to have a lot of things on the board and then buff a lot of things, or strangely, I actually think in an aggro deck, this might be a decent card because you throw up that 0/5, as you said, throwaway wall. But then you've got a 3/2 that can survive that and a bunch of other little smaller things that can kind of survive that. So, you know, if you're playing like 2/1s and 3/1s and then you manage to actually block a couple of those and the 3/2 with the 0/5, that might allow you to get much bigger punches than you normally do. So I haven't had a chance to play with this yet, but I think it might not be as horrible as you're thinking it might be. I'm not saying it's good. I think it might be a 3 at best. I'm not even sure it's there.
Yeah, the trouble is, like, it does have a place, but you're paying 4 mana for that. When it's like, if you're going aggro, I don't want to be paying 4 mana for this. I want to be paying 4 mana to deal damage to their face.
Well, but I think that this might translate to you doing more damage to their face. And that's the weird oxymoron I was saying with, an aggro deck. I think this taunt card might be good.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels, I guess, a little win more-ish because it's going to stop them if they don't have 5 damage on the board or they don't have a way to kill a 0 attack minion.
They would need 7 damage on the board to actually kill your ability to hit them for 3 next turn.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. I was thinking just get through the body so that they could hit all the 1-cost minions or whatever else that are out there on the board.
All right. Well, the way I look at it is I assume that they are going to kill the 0/5 without repercussion on their turn, but the upside is I get to keep everything else
for an extra. If they only have exactly 5 damage on the board.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, if we're early in the game, if we're actually around turn 4 or 5, something like that, that's not unrealistic. Yeah.
I've only faced it twice, and both times I was very unimpressed. I just killed it and then killed what I wanted. Both times it got played as situations where I already sort of had board control. So maybe in an aggro deck where they have board control and I'm so slow that I don't have anything on the board yet, I could see it definitely causing a problem. But yeah, I think 2 is the right place. I don't think it's up there with a 3.
Yeah, I'll follow your lead. All I want to do is put an asterisk next to this thing and say the possibility exists that it's not as bad as we think.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
What's up next?
Okay, so my notes got scrolled. Sorry. We have the Menagerie Magician. So this guy is like the Zubat, except he is a 5-mana cost 4/4 with a battle cry of give a random friendly beast, dragon, and murloc +2/+2. So the Zubat was a 3/3 for 3 mana, and this is a 4/4 for 5 mana. But gives each of those other minions +2/+2. So it's a little bigger in scale, but it's also a little more sort of all your eggs in a basket, one basket sort of feeling. You're still, I guess, up ever so slightly as long as you can target one thing. It's worse if you target nothing, and it's actually a lot better if you can target 2 things. So that really comes down to it. Is your deck built to have a beast and a dragon on the board when you cast this thing? But the fact that it's 5 mana does actually make it harder to just dump those things onto your hand the turn that you cast it.
Yeah, you can't combo it nearly as well.
Right, so that's one of the ways to make sure that you connect is to just play everything on the same turn a little later in the game. You still could, but now you're talking about like turn frankly, 10 before you can drop two other minions and this on the board.
Yeah. This sort of effect just has diminishing effects to me as the higher you get up the cost scale. Because if it only hits on one, which is usually all I'm predicting for these sorts of cards, in both of them, you get two bonus stats than what you paid for. Because mm-hmm. you get a 6-6 for 5 and or a 4-4 for 3. But it's just a lot less impressive when you paid 5 for it instead of 3. When you start getting into the higher end of the costs, I want more bang for my buck at that point. And the penalty for whiffing is so much higher because a 3-3 for 3, if it whiffs, okay, that's fine, but you still got a body on the board when you needed it. Mm-hmm. If this whiffs, you paid a 5 cost for 4-4?
Yep.
That hurts.
Great risk, great reward.
Yeah, so I really love the beast version of this. We gave it a 4, but I think this is even a 2. Is that too low?
No, I think 2 is about right. I think it's going to be fairly easy in the deck that wants it to connect once. And I think as long as you do that, it's honestly, it's fine. The real question is, how often is that deck capable of having it trigger twice?
Yeah, it's got to be so hard.
Yeah, you've got to have a low cost. There aren't really any low cost dragons other than, Fairy Dragon. So you're really talking about a small beast and then, I guess, a Murloc of some sort.
Yeah, it's got to go in an aggro deck, I guess, that is Beast Murloc.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, seems rough. I'm not interested. It just asks for so much. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong in Hearthstone with your deck. This is not worth the risk to me.
All right, so let's just give it 2s.
All right, 2s. That works for me. Let's jump into rares. What do we got?
All right, first up, Xavien Watcher, 5 mana cost, 3/6, which is not good, but it's got a battle cry. If you control a secret, gain +1/+1, and taunt. Well, that breaks it up to a 4/7 taunt, which is really, honestly, not that great.
No, I mean, that's basically Senjin's Shieldmaster stat-wise, right? Like, for the ratio, you're just getting vanilla stats plus taunt.
That's right. It's your big payoff in your sort of win condition.
Is breaking even.
with taunt thrown on there. And some cards will just give you something like taunt as gravy anyway. So it's interesting that it's rare. I guess that's good because it won't sandbag your arena choices as often. But I think it's pretty bad, especially in arena where you're not even guaranteed to get the trigger.
Yeah. It's very weird. I mean, it's such low payoff for something that's hard. Like, Ice Block is really the only thing I can think where you could guarantee. Because the trouble is, you're going to play the secret the turn before. Almost certainly. You're not going to combo this with the secret on the same turn. So you have to hope that they don't proc the secret so that you can play this next turn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, it's just not a big payoff, and I would have almost rather, like, I guess this, you're right, that this may want to be a mage card because it Ice Block is guaranteed to stick around the whole game until you would otherwise die. So it's a great trigger condition for it, but I don't know. Because it's a neutral, I feel like they just couldn't invest that much oomph into it. I don't know. So anyway, it's bad. It's bad, it's bad, it's bad.
It's bad, it's bad. But that said, I mean, and constructed in a secret heavy deck, because we are, constructed scores are the decks that want it most. In a secret heavy deck, I mean, it's a 3, right? Because it's a good taunt.
Yeah, I guess even in that case, you are still running a little bit of a risk that you can't fire it. Like, if you don't draw your Ice Block? So I don't know. I think this might be worse than a vanilla. Well, par with vanilla. I mean, 3 at best, maybe even a 2. I'm not sure.
All right. Yeah, I think we stick with 3. Because I actually do like 4/7 stat-wise as taunts. Like, 4/7, those are good numbers. That's going to eat up a lot of stuff.
It's pretty beefy, yep.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
But Arena, I mean, it's got to be a 1. Because it's still a body, but it's just bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have taunt without the secret. So, I mean, it's just a 3/6 for 5.
Yeah, which is essentially a 4-mana card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, up next, let's look at another overcosted minion. The Bookworm. This one's a 6 cost dragon, rare, 3/6. So you're missing a lot of stats, but it comes with a battle cry. If you're holding a dragon, destroy an enemy minion with 3 or less attack. So as a general rule, I just dislike cards that have two conditionals on them. You need to be holding a dragon and the enemy has to have a minion with three or less attack. It's so hard to get those to line up consistently, and especially if you can't control one of those, right? If your opponent just doesn't play a minion with three or less attack, you're hosed.
Yeah, it's true. Although, how many decks aren't playing minions with three or less attack?
That's true.
And people do run Stampeding Kodo in real decks sometimes.
Yeah, and Stampeding Kodo is good. Actually, so I made a note here. Craig, I was talking with him during lunch, who was our guest host on a while back. He's actually really optimistic for this card. So this is one of the cards that hasn't come out yet. He describes it as you pay one more to aim Stampeding Kodo and hit more targets. And so, I mean, when you put it that way, it sounds pretty good. Because like you said, Stampeding Kodo got some play in some good decks.
Yeah, I think if you could actually hit a two or three mana cost card with this, I think you're pretty happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragons, high-cost dragons is so tough for me because there are so many really good high-cost dragons that there's so much competition at this level. It's six cost?
Yep. Kind of depends on how often you can trigger the ability. I think if you can pretty reliably trigger it, I think you're pretty happy about it. Yeah. But it's going to have a higher variance, which is generally a bad thing because it's kind of, you know, high risk, high reward.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is the more dragons there are that have cool effects like this, the easier it is to guarantee you're going to have a dragon in hand because you don't have to put bad dragons in your deck. You can put all good dragons in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the more cards we get like this, the better they all get. I don't know. I mean, I kind of tempted. So we gave this card a one originally in Constructed. In Arena, I totally agree, it's still a one. I don't know. Maybe it's a three in Constructed in the deck that wants it most in a pure dragon deck.
Yeah, I think I think it's, let's call it a three. There's a possibility it's even a four, but I'd want to play with it.
Yeah.
There was that Rend Black hand that kind of had a similar equation going on, like kill a legendary if you had a dragon in your hand and you played him. It's a lot of ifs, but they're not like outrageous ifs. I mean, you are playing it in a dragon deck and people are playing minions.
Yeah, and I think the difference, so someone compared it to Shadow Word Pain, but Shadow Word Pain does, does three or less, and that hits a ton of stuff.
Yep.
I think the difference between Stampeding Kodo and this, which only does two attack or less, is actually a big deal. I think hitting three attack opens up a lot more targets.
Yeah, I mean, you get like a Ascension Shield Master with that. You can get
all the C'Thun cultists that are sitting over there procking every turn.
Yep.
All right, yeah, let's give it a three for now. In Arena, though, it's still one, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
All right, cool. All right, next up. What do you got?
We got Moat Lurker, a 6-mana cost 3/3. Yeah. Battlecry, destroy a minion. Okay. Death Rattle, resummon it. Okay. This one has been hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
If it was just a 3/3 with a Battlecry of destroy a minion, that would be amazing. It's like an assassinate with a decent body tacked on for a mana more. But the resummon it just means you're going to be back to where you started, and any damage that you might have done to that minion is going to be healed, assuming it's your opponent's minion. And if it's your minion, well, it's great that you can trigger, say, the battle or the death rattle off of it and get it back, but you don't really get to control the circumstances of getting it back, and it's very slow, so I'm not sure that's good either.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So I want to believe this is a fun card. So I know it's a fun card, right? It's the sort of card that you want to build a deck around. You want to put Sylvanas in your deck.
Yeah.
You want to do that sort of stuff. But the six cost is just so much, man. It's so hard because you want to believe it's removal. And actually, Ryan's comment to us was, this is the first neutral, unconditional removal, which is true. But it's not really removal, right? A 3/3 is so easy to get rid of.
Right.
To bring it back. But I mean, so you mentioned it's going to heal up the minion, but it's also going to strip any buffs. because it doesn't resummon the exact minion. It summons a fresh copy of that minion archetype or whatever.
That's very true.
So, I mean, I can see it be pretty interesting in that way. I think it's kind of cool. I think this is probably stronger, maybe even an arena than constructed, just because, I mean, it is neutral removal. Yeah. And some classes just don't really have solid removal spells.
Yep. And if you find yourself like unable to deal with taunt at the very end of a game, this is a way that any class can get that taunt creature out of the way. You know, just point at it, it's gone, and the rest of your stuff can get through. And in a pinch, it can still perform some other utility in a body if you want to cast it before the game's going to end.
Yeah, it's true. You don't care if it's going to come back because you're going to end the turn or end the game.
That's a pretty rare circumstance. I don't know how many times people would build a deck around that.
Yeah.
I could see it maybe, and I know this is weird again, but I could see it in an aggro deck as one of your few more expensive curve toppers, because it's got some versatility. You can get a taunt out of your way, or you can like use it on your Leper Gnome and then get your Leper Gnome back in a couple of turns.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited about this card. But then when I actually started building decks, I realized that I was just consistently avoiding it. Like, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I need a 6 cost. And like, oh, cool, this card's fun. Oh, but it's not going to work all the time. Is it really going to proc? I could just put a safe 6 cost in there that's guaranteed always going to be awesome. It just never quite made the cut for me, right?
Now, here's a question. What if it was a 4 mana cost 3/3 with disability?
Oh, my word, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the cost premium and just how expensive the card is in general that just, it's too much. It's like they wanted to make sure that it didn't break the game, and in doing so, they just costed it out of relevance.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they put this card out there as like a feeler for the effect, because it's the first time we've seen a destroy and resummon it sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
To see like, okay, what are the combos they come up with? How bad would it be if we gave them a good card with this effect?
Yeah, it feels like they just played it way too safe. And, like, the ability, just, it seems really hard to do anything with. But you know there's going to be some deck, some circumstance, where people figure out a combo. And then in that one deck, it's going to be worth a higher cost than everywhere else. The question is it worth 3.5 mana premium in that case?
Yeah, I just don't think so.
I'm with you. So, I don't know. We gave it a 2 in Arena, which feels about right, because it's, I think it's often going to be a liability and sit there and clog your hand, but there are going to be other times when it's a real workhorse and it does have some versatility. I suggested a 3 for constructed, less because I see its value, like the deck it's going to go in, and more because I think it's going to find a place by the time it leaves rotation where it actually is good somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ryan thought that it might be a 3, but wanted to test with it more in Arena. And I think that could possibly be true, especially in classes that don't have hard removal. I think it could be a 3. But I'm more comfortable with a 2 Arena score and 3 constructed.
Yeah, let's do that for now.
All right. What do we got in Epic?
All right, this thing is the Arcane Giant. Ooh, all right, so 12 mana cost, 8/8. It's another one of those giants that gets cheaper. In this case, costs 1 less for each spell you've cast this game. And I have to confess something to you, Josh.
Okay.
I think I'm wrong about this card, because everybody seems to be excited about it, and I'm just back here yawning and shrugging.
Have you not been killed by it yet?
No, I have not been.
Really? I see. I've died to it many times. It's hard for me to yawn and shrug when I've seen its power firsthand. This card is great. So my only comment when we first looked at it was mages just got a little more obnoxious. There's so many good spell-heavy mage decks right now. And I think actually with the cards that come out on Thursday, we could see a spell-heavy shaman deck as well that could be really strong. And it's not even like, okay, you can't cheat this out as early as the other giants, which I know was kind of your other complaint about this card. That's not what the goal of this is. The deck has spent the whole first half of the game just removing everything and playing spells and mana worms and that sort of stuff, just throwing spells on the board. And then all of a sudden on turn 8 or whatever, they just play two of these for free. And it's like, they've killed everything on your board. They've depleted your hand. Now there's 8/8s on the board. They're going to kill you in two turns. What's your answer?
Yeah, so that's I think where I have trouble, and I totally admit I may just be wrong here. Like I see enough other people. Like sometimes I feel like I'm swimming against the curve, but I got the right beat on it. And this is not one of those times necessarily. I feel like I'm probably wrong, but here's my thought process. At 12 mana, by the time you get it cheap enough to where you can cast it, you can already cast an 8/8 for about that much mana anyway, right?
Dude, you're totally underestimating how many spells these decks are playing.
I guess I am. So they're casting.
It's like turn 5, turn 6, you can play this dude. Especially okay. If you got coin, especially.
Yeah, coin. I wasn't thinking coin. That would help.
Yeah, because, I mean, mages, they're playing 3 spells on turn 1. Or 2 spells, sorry. Coin and mirror image after mana worm.
Yeah. And I play that deck, and I do love that deck, but. It just doesn't seem like that big of a... Yeah, all right. So again, I think I'm wrong. I will follow your guidance here, Josh.
So I think... Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, I don't play Mage a whole lot. I've just seen this card, and every time it lands on the board, I just don't have answers. I can't have answers because I spent the whole turn or the whole game just killing everything. Hmm. And then they have Counterspell, a Secret waiting on the board, just waiting for you. And the trick is, because like on turn 8 you mentioned they could play other 8/8s or whatever, but they play a full turn of spells and then play this for free.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't get that loss of tempo that you get when you're playing a real 8/8 on that turn.
But part of what I don't understand is where is the mage getting all of these cards? I mean, I guess if they're throwing the Cabalist Tome or Arcane Intellect or something in there, sure.
Yeah, I've seen Arcane Intellects. I've seen Discover off of whatever that dude is. The Ethereal Conjurer tosses a spell in hand.
And I have been playing, in my mage deck, I am playing a Cabalist Tome. And man, it feels real good to spend 5 mana. And if you like, because the mage deck, it does a really good job at controlling the board, but it flushes the cards very fast doing that. Yeah. But it's one of the few decks that can actually afford to spend 5 mana a little later in the game to like redraw a handful of Frostbolts and Fireballs. Yeah, and...
Especially when like, okay, I've gotten out both their Fireballs. I'm safe. Nope. There's the third Fireball.
Yeah.
I've seen Forgotten Torch a bunch in this deck as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's funny because like the deck we're talking about, it's essentially an update of the Tempo Mage. It's really not too far removed from Classic Mage even. You just tend to throw a couple of Flame Wakers in there and, all the damage spells you can get. So I'm running that deck. I don't even know what I'd take out. Like, am I taking out my Archmage Antonitis for this?
Yeah, that would probably be my guess. Because, I mean, it seems to fill the same slot.
But is that an upgrade, is my question.
I think so. Because Archmage Antonitis is your whole turn to do nothing.
Well, to win the game.
Well, sure. But if they answer it, you're spending all your mana, so you need another turn to get value out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll drop that, and I'll drop, one or two one-mana spells. I'll often save my coin for after I play Archmage.
Yeah, I mean, but then you're waiting till like, turn 9 to do that at best, probably. This guy's dropping on turn 7 on a turn that you already spent your whole mana turn on spells.
All right.
That's just what I've seen. But yeah, this was definitely one of the cards we talked most about. Your first response actually was really fun. Wow, conversation point.
Yeah.
So I think in Arena, I think you're probably right. It is a 1. Absolutely. But I think Constructed, I won't go so far as a 5, but I'm not going below a 4 on this.
Yeah, it probably is a 4 because people are using it. It seems like a real key to that archetype now. I don't have to say it in a future tense. This is already a card that is out there being used, being given respect, making its presence known. So yeah, that seems fair.
And come on, Scott, we got to give it a good score. It's the only neutral epic card in the whole adventure.
That's true.
He stands alone.
A lot of these sets don't do epics, and since rarity doesn't matter for like distribution, they did that exclusively to dictate where it falls in arena drafts.
Yeah, which I think is smart, because this is a bad card in Arena. So you just, let's make sure they don't see it very often.
I guess, and crafting the gold version. That's the other impact.
That's true. Oh, I haven't seen the gold version. I wonder if it's cool.
Yeah, it's got a lot of sparklies, and the blue kind of lights up all over it. All
right.
It's all right.
That's fun. All right, let's jump into legendaries, because we got some interesting ones to talk about. I'm really excited about this.
I agree. There are some... These are all interesting to talk about.
Yeah, they did a really good job of the legendaries this time, because it's not like the old gods where it's like, hey, you have to build an entire deck around me.
Mm-hmm.
But they all just have really interesting twists that kind of open up new ways to play.
Yeah. One of them's a little more specific, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. All right. So who are we looking at first?
I think we're starting off with the weakest of the bunch, also the cheapest, Morose. And he is a 3-mana cost 1/1, which rut-row, that's not good. He does have stealth. And then at the end of your turn, summon a 1/1 steward. So, of course, the mind can just revel in how many 1/1s you can produce over the course of a game. But, of course, he's very fragile. If there's any targeted or AoE damage, he's just gone. And it turns out, actually, it's really, really, really slow to come anywhere near making your mana back. And given the risk and the delay that you're waiting to even break even, the sort of center of gravity on him needs to actually be above average so that you're getting a positive return on investment relative to a vanilla minion. I mean, that's really any card you're playing, you should be looking for better than average. And I mean, what, 4-5 turns after you play him, he finally gets there?
Yeah.
Praying
that your opponent hasn't done an AoE ping at that point.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, Knife Juggler or any of the AoE effects, and there's a decent AoE effect in the set. Yeah. So I think you're in trouble. I think it's a hard guy to make work. I think he's a trap.
Yeah, I mean, so my initial comparison actually was to Pantry Spider. Because same cost. But this gives you 2 1/1s at the end of the first turn. And Pantry Spider gives you 2 1/3s right away. And you guys know how I feel about Pantry Spider, and I'd take that any time over this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It is the end of your turn. That helps a smidge.
Yeah. But I will say two things about this card. One, I love this guy in the adventure. He's super fun. He's the one that's escorting you around, telling you, and he's got that old school British accent that's fun. But in the Karazhan raid, he was undead. So right. I'm kind of hoping, so the last wing comes out on Thursday, I'm kind of hoping we see him die. And not just because he's a bad card, but I think like it'd be a really cool story moment. Because I don't think we've ever had anything important happen in the stories in Hearthstone. It'd be cool to actually see why he died.
That's true. So do you think he's going to end up being like the hero that sacrifices himself to save the party? Or what do you think is going to happen?
So it's funny, actually. One of his quotes, I can't remember exactly how it goes. But I think when he dies in WoW, he actually says, oh, that was clumsy of me. And then dies. So I would love for him to like fall down the stairs or something at the end and die on accident. I would think that'd just be great. And he could say his exact line and I'll have a little nerd happiness.
But Josh, what if you, the player, what if you were the person that has to dispatch Morose in a surprise twist?
What? Dude. Oh, that'd be awesome. It should be a little quick time cinematic where you push him. He's just teetering on the edge of the stairs and you have to like move your mouse to push him. Oh, and it won't advance and give you the cards until you do it. It's messed up.
So what score are we giving him?
I think it's just ones across the board, right?
I think so. Yeah, even if you're trying to do, you know, like one of my horde decks, because that's where before I did the math in my head, I got all excited. I'm like, well, game over, I win, you know, in these
infinite
horde decks.
Value.
Yeah, exactly. And then I stopped and did the math. I was like, oh, well, never mind. But even in that deck, because you don't even get the first one until the end of your turn, which is certainly better than the beginning of your turn. But because you don't get him till the end of your turn, you can't even like play him, get two bodies, and then take advantage of that turn. You still only get the one body that turn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, so Ryan's thoughts on this, which were actually really interesting, was that that turn three is such an important turn in Arena that you can't afford to fall behind on tempo on turn three in particular. And he said this card is basically just anti-tempo, so it's just awful. He said, this is a direct quote, if this is somehow the best legendary out of three, just retire the deck. Which I just loved. I thought that's so funny. I could just see him sitting there playing and be like, welp, let's try again.
Yeah.
So, there's, yeah, one's across the board. But let's talk about a card that I am much more excited about. I've been having so much fun with this card. Barnes. So he's a 4-cost, 3/4. So you're paying a 1 mana premium for what? A battle cry effect that is a summon a 1/1 copy of a random minion in your deck. What? So we've seen this effect a little bit. In theory, you just have to get basically like, I'd say like three stats, so like a 1/2 or a 2/1 out of it for this guy to break even and kind of be good. So worst case though is a 4/5, right? If you just get a vanilla dude with nothing special on him, which is how I should have said that instead of the stats, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it's a guaranteed 1/1, so you're guaranteed 4/5 for 4. But best case is like not instant win, but pretty close to instant win. Like you get a Sylvanas down. And there's a lot of fun shenanigans that come along with the Resurrect theme that's happening right now, because if you cheat out your 10-cost dude and he dies and you resurrect, it doesn't resurrect him as a 1/1. It resurrects the full version.
Yep.
There's some really cool combos with this card. And the thing I like about this card is there's tons of upside, right? Huge upside. But the worst-case scenario isn't bad. And that's always the test for me. Like, okay, because I fall prey to best case scenario a lot. So I have to force myself to be like, okay, but what's the worst case scenario? 4/5 vanilla and 2 bodies? That's fine.
Yep.
All right, what do you think? I'm done gushing.
No, I think this guy's pretty good. And I think he's a ton of fun as well. So he's that rare mix of both fun and good.
Yeah.
And I got to tell a story. This story is a sad story, Josh, but I have to tell it. Yeah. So I was playing a game. And my opponent, who is a priest, brings out Barnes. Thought, okay, you know, this will be interesting. Let's see what he gets. And he got, and this is, I don't even remember what this card is, because you don't see it very often. It's a 7/7 that can't attack. Well, and that's just it. 7/7 that I think it can't attack. And or unless it's the only minion on the board.
But of course, the Eerie Statue.
Eerie Statue. So it became a 1/1 that can't attack unless it's last thing on the board. And I'm thinking, you know, what... What is this guy doing that he even has these cards in the same deck? Because he just brought out a 1/1 with a drawback. You know, he didn't get his cool combo. And so, like, I'll have you know, I'm not a bad manners guy. I'm a good manners guy, you know. But I couldn't help myself. I oopsed him. I couldn't help it.
I feel backfire coming now.
I oopsed him. And then the next will turn... Come. And this is just the weird conflation of two horrible things. You know, when you see a player do them, they're both bad and wrong. And I just, he purified it and it became that silent. So it just became a 7/7 with no drawback on turn, you know, 5 or something. Because it was the turn after Barnes. He may have even coined out the Barnes on 3. I don't know. It was super early. Oh my God. So he just had this like unconditional, this 1/1 with a drawback turned into an unconditional 7/7, and he got to draw a card back from Purify. So,
see, Scott, I love seeing that because that's the one time out of 100 that guy won with that deck. He's just having the best time of his life, and you're like, you know what, buddy? You go for it. You got this. Because the rest of the time, that deck's just awful.
Yeah, so I oopsed him again after he did that. I oopsed, making it clear that was my oops. You know, the last oops was an oops. I hope that showed through to him. But yeah, I had to eat my... The one time I was kind of bad manners and sarcastically oopsed a guy, he was actually on a killer play with two horrible cards.
I mean, so I haven't run into that because I'm not running any self-silence. I am running one mass dispel in my deck, but self-silence. But if there's ever a good self-silence card, and Priest would be the class to get it, I mean, that is another potential cool combo with this card that I hadn't even thought of. I mean, yeah, because you could cheat out something huge and silence it and let it go to town.
Well, and I gotta admit, in that circumstance, suddenly 2 mana to turn a 1/1 with a drawback into a 7/7 vanilla and to draw a card, that is a good use of Purify. And depending on how often he had those kinds of shenanigans going on in his deck, Might not have been so bad. I mean, if his deck was really built to take advantage of it, maybe Purify has a home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, right, that's my sad story.
So my initial thought when I was playing this card is I compared it a little bit to Emperor Therizion, and to a lesser extent, Dr. Boom, don't get crazy, just because I thought it was a really versatile card, where it didn't ask a whole lot of your deck to get value out of it. But the more I played with it, I think it does ask kind of more than I thought. Because mm-hmm. you can't run too many vanillas in your deck. I'm running this in my priest deck. And like I have the injured blade masters and the bishops. Mm-hmm. And like even that, there was only, I think, like 5 or 6 neutral minions in my deck, but that was enough to really cause problems with this card where it just wasn't pulling its weight. So I think you really do need a deck that is dedicated to getting things with death rattle or special effects. So I still think it's a 5. I'm going to argue for 5, but it's not as crazy versatile as a 5. But in the deck that wants it, I think this card is unbeatable.
Oh, I think it's beatable, but I think it's a 5. Yeah.
Sorry, unbeatable score-wise. You're not going to find higher scored cards. Yeah,
yeah, I'm with you. This Barnes is a really good card in the deck that wants it. I think there's a fairly, I mean, it's like to your point, there are decks where he's not good. I mean, he's vanilla-ish, and that's the best thing that you can say about him in those decks. But there's a spectrum then where he starts to get a little better and a little better and a little better, and at the end of the, you know, at the full end of the spectrum, he's amazing.
At the end of the rainbow, he's a leprechaun.
That's right. And so, you know, you throw him in those decks that are already doing a myriad of shenanigans, and it's not just Priest, but Rogue has its own version going on now too. And I think in those decks especially, there's just all these crazy shenanigans. And the fun factor and the wow factor is just through the roof.
Yeah, it's out of control. Like, even the effect is super cool where the spotlights start going and you can kind of see something forming there. Then the spotlight hits and it turns on and just, you're like ecstatic or crushed. Oh, it's so fun.
Yeah, it's a good suspense moment that they added.
Yeah, it's a really cool card. I think this is probably the best designed card. Yeah. Neutral card in the set. It's just so fun and it's strong.
And I've heard other people say this too, and I want to echo this, that this is arguably, it's random, but there are many, many types of random. And this is a type of random that you, the player, get to shape, right? It's like, this is not pick a random card from the game or, you know, a random minion on the board eats it, or, you know, this isn't like Yogg-Saron random. This is... you get to control this and you get to dictate how good the spectrum of possibility is. And there are decks where there are no bad answers or no even average answers. There's only good answers, and that's under your control. So, that to me is a little more fun than just like the blue sky randomness or the could be good, could be bad randomness.
Yeah, I agree. And actually the thing that I didn't realize until recently, the cards like this that say summon a 1/1 copy of a random minion in your deck, it doesn't include cards that you've played or are in your hand. It's literally only the cards that are left in your deck.
That's right. That's right.
And so as you're playing, you can also try and control it more. Mm-hmm. If you're like, ooh, I have a lot of vanilla minions in there left, you can hold on to it and be like, no, I don't need it right now. I'm going to wait till later when I know I have like a 50-50 chance of getting something amazing.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to control because it can tilt good or bad. Like, you can't control which direction it goes. But what you can do is say, right now is a good circumstance, so I have incentive to use it sooner to take advantage of that before that may slip away. Or you can also say, right now is a bad circumstance. You know, it's not going to provide me as high a value, so it doesn't necessarily stack up as a priority. You can see other cards in my hand. Or I'm going to wait and see if circumstance maybe tilts a little more in my favor over the course of a game. I think those are relatively small influences, but they are still influences and decisions you have as a player to help shape that randomness.
Yeah. And I will say, I don't own Yasarge, Rage Unbound, but I desperately want to craft him just so I can pull off this combo once. Because he's the guy, the 10 cost 10/10 that at the end of your turn, put a minion from your deck into the battlefield.
Oh, uh-huh.
Oh, I want that so bad on this minion. I want it so bad on that 1/1. Oh, it'd be so good. And then if it pulled Yasarge, you could have two of them on the board. I want to live that best case scenario once before I die.
See, that's but these are the exact kind of like crazy shenanigans and wow factor I'm talking about. Like, the combo potential is just... It opens up in a way the game's never supported before for these types of combos.
Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah.
All right. Who we got next?
Prince Malkazar. When the game starts, oh, sorry, 5 mana cost 5/6 demon. So he is a vanilla cost demon for 5 mana. When the game starts, add 5 extra legendary minions to your deck.
So this just does totally random legendaries, I assume?
Seems to be totally random legendaries. Now the question is, because he's sort of priced as a vanilla minion, the real question is that ability good? And I don't know the answer to that.
People came here for answers, Scott. Give them answers.
Well, so let's explore that. But I think it's probably maybe slightly bad. And my reason for thinking that is, if you have a deck that is 30 cards, that is a finely tuned machine, what you don't want to do is throw 5 random cards into that probably don't share that synergy. So, yeah. Well, and that's a constructed view. I would say maybe in Arena, he's actually better because in Arena, you're a controlled card. I mean, your cards aren't that far off from random anyway. I mean, there was a choice of 3 cards, so maybe it's a little above average, maybe. But legendary cards are generally a little above average as well. And I'm not sure about how often you're going to get class cards or if the legendaries you get are only your class or can be other classes. I probably should have researched that. But
this is the card that comes out. It doesn't come out till Thursday, I think.
Oh, right. So we haven't been able to play with it. But yeah. if it does bring in class legendaries, and it doesn't matter really if it's your class or not, class legendaries will tend to be better than the vanilla legendaries because class cards in general tend to be better than vanilla.
Yeah.
So that'll help a little bit. But, you know, the card that I think that this almost compares best to is Elise Starseeker.
Because, oh, really?
Well, yeah. So it's kind of strange, but people see Elise as being a good card. I see people play with her in constructed decks, trying to be good, knowing their competition is fierce. And this notion of throwing a bunch of random legendaries in your deck, in fact, making everything a random legendary, seems to be a good thing. So this is just kind of giving you part way down that road at the beginning of the game for free.
So, yeah, I could see that. But the big thing for me with Elise, because I hate this Prince Malkazar card. I think it's just awful for the same reasons you said. But the things I like about Elise is that it gives you a guaranteed fatty taunt, right? If you're getting to the point where that's happened, you're guaranteed to have a 6/6 taunt for really cheap. I forget what it is, 3 cost, maybe 4 cost.
Well, you're not guaranteed to have it, and it's not that much of a cost savings.
Sorry, but the dilution doesn't happen until you're guaranteed to have that.
Oh, you will have, yeah, I got you. You have to pass
that. Yeah, because the dilution only happens when you play that card. Yep. So by the time you dilute your card pool, you're guaranteed to have that taunt. And the dilution only happens when you want it to happen. Because with Elise, sometimes I've had the monkey in my hand and just hold on to it because you know you want to play some of the other cards before you go random.
Yeah.
But this card just doesn't give you any of those options. It just, before the game even starts, have a bunch of random legendaries. And I'm sure legendaries tend on average to be above average or power-wise. But there's a lot of really bad legendaries that I'd never want to play. Like Morose. We just looked at one of them like, that guy's going to get thrown in your deck.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. This card has essentially, to me, like all of the downsides of Elise and none of the upsides.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't like either card. I don't like Elise. I don't like Prince Malkazar. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Elise, yeah. Over time, I've liked Elise less. But I would not feel bad about putting Elise in my deck, and I would feel bad about putting this card in there. This just makes your deck worse before the game even starts.
All right.
Although, I mean, I don't think we know yet if it can duplicate your legendaries, and so there is going to be some random cases where you're going to get double Archmage, right, in your deck, and that's pretty cool. But
all right, so here's a couple questions. What about an Arena deck where you're only playing one copy of a lot of cards anyway?
Oh, no, this would ruin Reno decks.
Because you might get dupes?
Yeah, what if you got like a dupe of Reno or something and you play him and he doesn't do it?
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, so if you ran a Reno deck with no other legendaries, then Reno would be the only one that could break it. That's maybe? True.
And there's a lot of legendaries in the game, so I would think odds of dupes are pretty low.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And all right, there's that situation. Now, what if they came out with a card that actually buffed legendary cards? Yeah, plus one for every legendary or something. Do you think there's value in some all legendary deck?
I could see that. Yeah, but it would only be there for people that can't afford all the legendaries they want.
Hmm.
So if you were building a legendary deck and you only own 15 legendaries, then yeah, this is a great card in that deck.
That's true, because you're not drawing additional legendaries. In fact, it's diluting the ones that you chose.
Yeah.
Because which is better? 30 cards that you chose or 30 cards that you chose that are the best cards plus 5 random cards?
Yeah. 30 yeah. cards you chose, guaranteed. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the only thing is it helps against mill. You get 35 cards in your deck.
True. But in the rogue mill deck. Huh.
Yeah.
So, all right, what are we looking at? In Arena, does he have more potential?
I think his ability is actually pretty decent in Arena. For the reasons you said, you're getting kind of random cards anyways. Legendary cards in general will just be better there. You're not usually trying to build a specific strategy anyways in Arena. And I mean, it's still a 5-cost, 5/6 in Arena, which is decent.
Yeah. So 3 in Arena?
Yeah, I think he breaks. I think he's slightly above vanilla in Arena. Constructed, wow. though, I mean, he's not a 0, obviously.
No. He's vanilla. But
yeah,
he's
vanilla. But yeah. he's vanilla with the downside. Like you said, I think his ability actually makes him worse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do we want to go down to a 2 or a 1?
Maybe a 1. Because I do think it's a pretty, like, no self-respecting, well-crafted legendary deck. I just can't, we tried. We can't think of one he goes in where he helps.
Yeah.
He hurts everything.
And so he hurts everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Guilty. Yeah. I judge guilty. And okay. He's a demon. That's no good.
Yeah.
All right, next up, the Curator. A 7-cost taunt, 4/6. Eek, 100 eeks, but battle cry, draw a beast, a dragon, and a murloc from your deck.
And he's a mech.
And he's a mech, yeah.
For whatever that means.
So how many of those does he have to draw before you're happy? I mean, that's the ultimate question, right?
I mean, two's good. One, I think I'd be pretty disappointed with one because I will have paid 2 extra mana, and if I want to pay extra mana on top of a decent card to draw a card, I'm probably just doing a Azure Drake.
Yeah, I mean it is. I think it's only 1.5 mana because it'd be a 5/5 taunt for 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
1.5 mana. Yeah. I mean. I'm sticking all in with you got to do these cards with 2 tribes. I think like maybe Druid, Beast Druid with some dragons up top, maybe. Because I think you got to look at this card. I've really loved the Yogg-Saron Hunter deck. And I think you have to kind of look at it as the King's Elic in Yoggenlode, where you put in King's Elic and you put in Yogg-Saron. And those were the only things in the deck, so it was guaranteed to draw. Mm. I think here you put in like 1, maybe 2 super high-end dragons. And you're playing a beast deck,
mm-hmm.
and then you try and fish for that 1 super huge dragon you put in, and then a random whatever beast that you get along with it.
Yeah, and I do like Murloc Knight and Paladin, and I think that's the real deal.
Okay, yeah. Totally. So, yeah. This card is really hard to tell. I just haven't seen a Menagerie deck work, and there's no more Menagerie cards coming.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's just not going to be a thing or people just haven't explored it enough yet.
We might see something next expansion.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, yeah.
Maybe it's so diverse. The payoffs on these cards are not huge.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to like the idea that you're going to have 3 minions on the board at all when you cast a minion, let alone 1 of each different tribe. Because that's what it takes for the max payoff. And not Curator, admittedly. You just need to have them in your deck. So that's good. This guy doesn't ask much of you other than to put the stuff in your deck.
Yeah, the thing for me, though, is like... So the key with King's Elic was that it's so low cost. If you play it on turn 2, your chances of already drawing Yogg-Saron are super low. If you're playing this guy on turn 7, like if you're only throwing a couple, if you're only splashing dragons in there, by the time turn 7 rolls around, you have a pretty decent chance of having already drawn it.
Yeah, we could play around with a hypergeometric calculator and calculate the odds, but
yeah.
I would say 3 minimum, 4 feels pretty safe of each faction. Like 4, the odds would be astronomical that you would whiff, in my opinion, unless you're drawing the curator at the end of the game. I guess
drawing none of them.
None of a given type, okay. Right. Now, admittedly, if the curator is the 30th card in your deck, you won't be drawing any. If it's the 29th card in your deck, well, it's likely you'll whiff on all three fronts, right? So it's really bad at the end, but then again, the game rarely goes that long.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think 3 or 4 of a type in your deck, and you're pretty likely to connect. You know, I'm going to wave my hands and say 90% of the time for each class under normal circumstances.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the deck that wants most, in the Menagerie deck, I mean, we had 3 down here, but I think it's probably a 4. If you're paying 1.5 mana premium, 1.5 to 2 mana premium to draw 2 cards, maybe 3. I mean, that's pretty good. And 4/6 taunt isn't that bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you're drawing 3 cards, it's good, but how good are those cards? I mean, one of them's a Murloc.
Yeah. So I think I stick with Beast Dragon deck.
Yeah.
Okay. I just throw Murlocs out the window.
Yeah. I don't think that's that great. I mean, look at all the things you can get for 8 mana in this game. Like all the legendaries and what they do. I mean, you can get a Ragnaros, you can get a Tyrion Fordring, you know, you get a Draxus. Is this guy really the one that's going to, because he's so slow, right? I mean, you get a 4/6 on the board, but you spent pretty much all your turn doing it.
Yeah. All right, I could stick with 3.
Yeah.
Will you meet me at 3?
I'll meet you at 3. I'm not even sure he's that high. I want him to be. And I think if the deck gets better, he might get better. But right now, he's not amazing. And I think it's just playing a bad deck.
All right.
Not amazing. Build a bad deck is a hard thing to give a high score to.
As soon as this episode is done, I'm going to build a Beast Dragon Druid deck, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to use that card.
Yeah.
We'll do some duels.
Yeah, I've got a Menagerie deck built and ready to go.
All right. Let's make it happen.
Okay.
So in Arena though, we're giving it a 1.
Yeah.
Ryan said I thought the taunt alone would give it a 2. But Ryan didn't even think that was enough to make up for it. Just the tempo loss that you lose, kind of what you're saying, it's so slow.
Oh, hell no. And, yeah. No.
Yeah, I asked him, I was particularly interested in kind of how popular the tribes are in Arena.
Mm-hmm.
So Ryan was saying dragons are definitely the rarest tribe. He said the Murlocs you get in Arena are bad with a few exceptions, and beasts can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the best case scenario that he'd expect is a Stranglethorn Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have need to not have already drawn it at that point. He gave it a 1, and I think he talked us into that.
Yeah, I stand behind. I mean, my assessment, my scale, he's a 2 mana cost premium. You know, I would expect like a 7, 8 or something for 7 mana vanilla, or a 7/7 taunt. And so this is a 4/6 taunt, which kind of goes to a 5/5 taunt. So, I mean, to me, this thing is 2 mana for the ability. And it's just, it's really slow, it's really clunky. And if you're not drawing 2 cards off that, I think you probably should have picked a different legendary.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Or maybe a different deck.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's look at the last legendary.
All right, last guy is Medivh the Guardian. He is an 8 mana cost, 7/7, with a battle cry of Equip Atiesh, the Great Staff of the Guardian. And that is, if I'm not mistaken, a 1/3 weapon that every time you cast a spell, it removes a charge and gives you a minion of that cost. So kind of like that summoning portal, right?
Yeah, totally.
On a stick.
Yeah, with 3 charges, yeah.
With 3 charges. And so that's slow, but to me, this is a much like more universal card. It's a much easier card to make work, and it's a card that some decks can make much better use out of than, say, the Curator.
Yeah, that is very true. And I'm super interested to see this card and see if it actually finds a place in the spell heavy mage decks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems like the most natural fit to me, but it's slow, man. I mean, it's slow. An 8 cost. You normally can't play a spell on the same turn. If you can, you're playing a 3 cost, and that's not what you want to be doing to get value out of that staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was really fun because we got to play around with this. I think it was in the preview level, one of the levels we got to use this card in the adventure.
It was probably the prologue when Medivh was actually there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was the prologue, and it was really fun. Like, the turns where you get to do this and then play, like, Firelands Portal.
Yeah.
So you just summon a random 7 cost, a 5/5, and deal 5 damage. Like, boom, the game is over.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to survive till then. But I mean, I don't know. So, because I haven't played Temple Mage much, this may be a dumb question, so I apologize if it is, Scott. If you have heavy tempo, and you have kind of, when mages get around to like turn 7, turn 8, they usually have strong board, enemies at low health. Does that mean you can afford to kind of let up a bit and then take advantage of this, or you just have to keep going?
That's a good question. I was trying to think, because, you know, I asked about Antonitis earlier, and this guy is, I believe, 1 mana more expensive, but his stats are better, and I think it might even be a better effect, because it doesn't matter if he dies.
Yeah, I think it's a much better effect for that exact reason.
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna substitute him in for Antonitis and see how that works.
Cool. Now, how many high-cost spells are you running in that deck?
Let's see. I do run a Flame Strike. I run Fireballs, which are not super expensive. I got there's a lot of fours. I threw a Firelands Portal to see how that worked, and spoiler alert, it's better than I thought when I first saw it. So, you know, I think that's a real card.
Yeah.
There's some seven costs. I think I had a Pyroblast in there, but I think I took it out today.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, I think I took it out to put in the Firelands Portal.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, Pyroblast is an edgy card, but it's a real card. I mean, usually people run one if they're running any at all, and usually they don't run any.
Yeah, I think this card is going to be good. I really do. Just the staff, because, I mean, so how many stats do you need to get out of the weapon for this card to feel good? Do you need to play, like, is playing 3 one-cost spells enough?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess. So he needs about a mana and a half to be like a vanilla. Now, for a legendary, you would expect something more than a vanilla because you can't.
And his value is slow.
Right, exactly. So, and because he's slow as well, you would expect a little extra oomph. But hey, 3/1/1 still brings him up to 10/10 in total value for 8 mana. So that's not horrible. And you can get that out the turn you play him as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 1 mana cost creatures are actually going to be like 2/1s or 1/2s. They're rarely going to be an actual 1/1.
Yeah, you could get a mana worm and live the dream.
Yeah, true, true.
Do random effects like this that don't put stuff in your hand, can they get other classes stuff, or is it still restricted to your class?
It seems to vary by card. I mean, maybe there's some logic or like wording that dictates it that I haven't been able to grasp. But I asked myself that question earlier because, you know, things that just say put a random minion on the board does seem to be any class at all.
Yeah, like Piloted Shredder could do other class cards.
Yeah, but when you discover a card, that's definitely always of your class unless it says otherwise. I think it's, unless it says, if it just says random card, I think that does tend to be of any class.
Yeah. I think this card is going to be great. I really do. I don't think it's a strict upgrade to Antonitis, but I think it's probably close to an upgrade, and that card is already great.
Yeah. I think I'm getting warmer on it as we talk about it.
Okay. So I know you were thinking 3 on this. I'm kind of feeling 4. I'm not going to lie. Constructed.
In Constructed, I think I see a case for that because the comp that I keep coming back to in my head is Archmage Antonitis. And I think I like this better. And this was, sorry, you started to ask this question earlier and I don't think I answered it, but like, can you control the board enough that you can afford a slow guy like this at the end? And honestly, the answer is often yes in a mage deck that you can.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that gets me really excited about this card. I would argue for a 4. And this is crazy talk, Scott. After I play with it, I'm open to the idea that this could be a 5. But I'm not going to say it's a 5 right now. I think it's a 4. But I'm open to the idea that it could be a 5.
Yeah. you know, as a scientist, I never close my mind to anything. but a 5 feels like a stretch to me. I think it's a 4.
Yeah. 4 sounds good to me. Arena? I mean, it doesn't ask a whole lot.
No, it's really expensive. And you, the problem in Arena is, like, there are some Arena decks that just do not have many spells. Notice, like, I've been paying attention in Arena, and, like, often my hand is just all minions.
Yeah, if you just get offered really bad spells all the time, like, if you're in a class like Paladin or something where there's just a lot of bad spells, yeah, that's very true. All right, so I think it's still probably a 3, because I mean it's still a 1/3 weapon at worst.
Yeah, I'd call it 3 for sure.
All right, so 4 for 3. All right.
Yeah.
So we made it through the neutral, Scott. We did it.
We did it.
Woohoo! So community, we don't have much going on, but we do have a card of the week.
It's Josh's card of the week.
I love it. Keeping it short. And threw my name in there because this week, so we were originally going to throw one of the card reviews in there, but I've been having a little fun this week designing my own cards. So as I started playing the Resurrect Priest archetype when the Bishop came out, I was playing just a ton of Priest, and I tried to come up with the card that I wish was in the set other than Purge or Purify. And so I just started designing Priest cards that I thought would work well to try and get Priest back in the meta and kind of solidify their identity. And their identity, for me, is a lot of heal tricks and things like that. And so I made a card called Scarlet Inquisitor. It's our card of the week. I want to get your opinions on it, Scott. So this is not a real card, just to clarify again, so no one's confused. This is a card I made up. It's a 1-cost, 1/2, battle cry, deal 1 damage to all minions, then restore 1 health to all minions.
Pretty interesting. I like that it's got, you know, the kind of body you would expect from a 1-cost minion, and it's interesting because you read that battle cry, you're like, well, it does a damage and it heals the damage. It's just like a net neutral for everything. But it's the combo potential. It's using it in the right circumstance. You know, if you can arrange the circumstance so that your enemy has some 1-cost or 1 health minions, but you don't, this will de facto kill all of those. There are interesting implications with in Priest with both spell damage as well as was it Prophet Velen? Am I getting that name right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's some interesting implications there where you can sort of ratchet it up with combos, and of course those combos are under your control, so you can choose to use that amplification at times that would be most valuable for you. And I find those cards interesting. Cards that sort of on the surface have an effect that doesn't do much but can be sort of tuned and controlled for interesting effects.
Yeah, me too. That's really what I was going for, is especially I was looking for early turn plays, because as I was playing the Resurrect deck, I wanted more early removal and I wanted more heal tricks. I mean, this guy combos so fun with Northshire Cleric, obviously, to draw, but I'm totally blanking on the one, the 1/2 that grows every time you heal as well.
Oh, Priestess of Loon?
Is that the one?
I can't remember. There was a spell that brought it out too, and I can't.
Yeah.
It I think rotated out of standard and made me super sad. But there's the 3/5 holy.
Yeah, the gross. Who I'm running in my Resurrect deck and having a lot of fun with.
Yeah, I like her a lot.
Yeah, I remember you were really high on her when we reviewed her, and I think she's been undervalued.
Yeah.
So that's what I was just trying to do, have fun with this and kind of solidify the Priest to move towards, like, okay, we're going to be about heal tricks and stuff like this. So that's fun. So if you had to give it a score, Scott, because I think it's probably high on the power curve. I was aiming to go high on the power curve because part of the goal was to get Priest back into the meta with the design I was doing. What would you give it?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about evaluating with a score for power. See, this is tricky, right? Because on one hand, you're putting on your design hat to actually develop a well-balanced card. So if I'm just coming out and saying that it's super powerful, it's 5, to me, and that was almost a failure of the design.
Yeah.
So if I'm, I don't know.
You can say I failed at design, Scott. I won't be offended.
All right. So if I'm evaluating this strictly in power, I think I'd give it a 3 in Arena because it's going to be hard to control to your benefit, but you can control it a little bit. And the fact that it's a 1-cost, 1/2 just means it's a low impact body. So it kind of is all about that ability.
Yeah.
I think you'll get probably a little bit of synergy out of it in Arena, but I think it's really in Constructed where it can enable some hardcore shenanigans, and it would settle somewhere in the 4 to 5 range in the deck that is built to take advantage of its shenanigan potential.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah, this was the first card I designed, and I think I went a little heavy-handed with the power level. Like, my other ones got a little more interesting as we went along. But yeah, cool. Thanks for walking through that with me.
And it's interesting because it's not brute force power. It's all combo potential power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you said, 1-2 body on the board, wah-wah.
Yeah, and the effect itself just washes out. I mean, it kills all 1-cost minions on the board, but otherwise that's really all it does on the surface.
Yeah, and I liked it too because you could draw it late, and it's actually really impactful if you have a decent board down already.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, so we're trying something new. I've been posting these on Twitter. I tried to do one a day last week, and I think I got through 4 of them. I started doing the class weapons, which I'm super excited about. I did the Rogue ones first because the WoW expansion, which comes out tonight, actually in 2.5 hours when we're recording this, is putting in class weapons. So I'm going to try and design a class weapon for each Hearthstone class as well.
Super cool.
Yeah, so if people want to see more of these on the show, because Scott recommended putting it on the show in the card of the week just to see if people liked it, because originally I was just going to leave it on Twitter, but if you guys want more of these, I can keep doing it on the show. So let me know if you like them or if you hate it and you just want the real cards. Let us know too.
Well, I'm leaving my vote right now. My vote is that you keep, you like, from now on, every week, custom Josh card of the week.
Man, you know I'd be down for that. I love thinking about this stuff. What I've been doing is I design these cards in about 30 minutes because I just design it during my commute. So I get in the car and I think like the next card we'll talk about next week if people care. My brother told me that he wanted a card the priest could play on turn 2. Mm. And so I was just like, okay, 30 minutes in the car. I'm going to come up with a card that's going to be good in turn 2 and fit into what priests need to do right now. And so I went with that theme. And so it's fun because the cards aren't perfect. I toss them on Twitter and get feedback from people, and we talk it through and change the design. But it's just a fun brain exercise to think about, like, okay, we all thought Purify was bad, but what would we do differently?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, man, there's a lot of people designing their own cards out there, and a lot of people just don't have a good design sense for what's interesting, for what's balanced. All the ones I saw come out of you this week were good. Josh, it's almost like you're a professional video game designer.
I'm trying to be, buddy. I'm trying. It actually means a lot coming from you that you said that. I really appreciate that. Because I know you, obviously, you work on a card game for a living, and I don't. So you know more about this than I do. So
yeah, I work on a digital CCG, but you're a video game designer by trade, and
yeah,
it's sort of an interesting compliment we got going on here.
Yeah. All right. So if you want to check out our whole review, you could see all the cards we talked about, the scores, our banter, all that sort of good stuff on GameDiplomat.com. We'll have links to all the videos and show notes and stuff in there. And if you want to let us know what you thought of the show or what you'd like to see added in future episodes, you can contact us as always on Google+, Happy Hearthstone, on Twitter, @JAugustine, or email thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. Or hey, be old-fashioned, leave a comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. You can find more info at gamediplomat.com/donate. Scott, where can people find you?
On Twitter, I am slants76, S-L-A-N-T-Z.
Yeah, you've been pretty active on there, too. It's been fun. You've been sending me Hearthstone questions and screenshots. It's been fun.
Yeah, less so than I have been in the past. I was pretty active in the past, but I'm trying to get back to it.
Yeah. So, also, if you want to hear more of me and more about awesome games that I think you'll love, you can check out my other podcast, Game Diplomat, which we started. And since our last episode of Happy Hearthstone, which was a while ago, I should have mentioned, we took a week off because I couldn't find a guest host for deck battles. I sent out that call and nobody responded. Or one person did, but they wanted to do a deck that could only happen after all the adventures came out. So if you want to be on the show, let me know because I need people for deck battles. Otherwise, like, I just can't do the episode. I can only have Scott on so many times.
You're not going to let me do another deck battle?
I know. You just beat me. You just beat me. Oh. Yeah, and actually, the next deck battle, I'm super excited because that's when we decide if Dragon Priest makes it into the Hall of Fame. If they can win, they're in.
The stakes are high.
They are. I'm excited. But so on Game Diplomat, since our last episode, we talked about You Must Build a Boat and Banner Saga, which is one of the greatest stories ever told in video games. So please check out that podcast, GameDiplomat.com. I also give away free copies of the games. And last time, this is kind of embarrassing for me, but I'll just go ahead and say it. I had 5 codes to give away of Banner Saga. Only 3 people sent in guesses. So everybody won, and I had 2 codes with nobody to give to.
And that's such a good game.
It's such a good game. It's an incredible game. And I'm hoping that I got that few responses just because the game's so good, everyone already owns it.
That was my case, yeah.
Okay, good. So that's what I'm hoping. But so if you want free games, I'm giving them away to literally anyone that answers. You get a free copy of the game. So You Must Build a Boat is the most recent one. And then next time we're talking about Force Showdown, which I think you guys will be really interested in. It's if you took Diablo and combined it with a card game. That's what you would get.
I bought that. So I've listened to each of your episodes, and I even read the ones you were posting before you started the podcast. And I think I've now played every single one of the games because our tastes are pretty similar. But I bought Force Showdown. I played the heck out of that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember you saying you were going to buy it. I never heard what you thought, though. You really liked it?
Yeah, it was quite good. In fact, I recommended it to somebody else who was looking for sort of a bite-sized Diablo-like, and he likes CCGs because he's actually on my team at work. And yeah, I've recommended it to somebody as like, I think this would be a great game for you.
Nice. Yeah, did you do the daily challenges?
I did not do the daily challenges.
So I got re-hooked on the game when they introduced daily challenges. It came in a patch a little later.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a special map that's only up for one day with a leaderboard. Huh. But the trick was you got huge rewards if you even played it.
Oh, wow.
And so you could get a lot more cards and build a lot more interesting decks. Because you don't buy cards like you do in Hearthstone. You just earn them as you play.
Right.
And so those daily challenges let me unlock a lot more cards, and it got a lot more fun after that.
Yeah, well, that's a good series you've got, and I know it's—I don't know—if it feels like you're off to a slow start with people not writing in so much, but they're missing out. And in the case of Banner Saga, you know, like I already had it on both iOS and Xbox, I think, but I hadn't and PC, but I hadn't really played it because it was free here and there, and I bought it at least once. But when you recommended it, I went back and played it. I was on I took a business trip to Montreal a couple weeks ago, and it was a long plane flight, and you can play that offline on iPad. So
nice.
I dove in.
Nice. It's so good. I'm glad you played. We'll talk more about it after the podcast.
Yeah, there we go.
I got to hear more. But yeah, so the whole podcast is just about small indie games you might have missed that I think are awesome. So check that out. You can find it on GameDiplomat.com. It's the Game Diplomat Podcast. What? Name synergy. Finally. Scott, thanks for joining us on the show and for getting through the review with me. I'm really excited to do classes next time.
Always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, and everyone listening, thanks again for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
See ya.